I appreciate the opportunity. Did I hear right? This is the 79th in a row. That's really pretty impressive. It's funny. I'll be honest. There was for business reasons, there's not a lot of I miss about Cincinnati, but for personal reasons, some of my connections, again, seeing Jason and Lonnie, and my wife is upstairs. I know she would see the same. So it's nice to see a couple of familiar faces. I think we've got a couple of people from Atlanta. I'm not sure if they're here to support me or take notes and be able to throw it back in my face later, but either way, I greatly appreciate. By the way, just real quickly, I'm going to turn off my video just because you were asking about our memories. So the picture that's up there of us, that's actually 5 years ago at our first experience at this banquet. And hence, by the way, the red coat, I had zero intention of putting on grown-up clothes. And then Jason shamed me into putting on grown-up clothes and didn't tell me he was going to be wearing a tie. So please forgive my relatively casual attire for the evening. So again, I always think about telling stories, and I think about it being like a speech. One of my early mentors said, "Remember when you're telling a speech or a presentation, remember the three things: be brief, be brilliant, and be gone." So I will try and be relatively entertaining. I will say it's interesting. I've never done my story without being able to get the crowd feedback. It's usually boos, but either way, it's nice to be able to get a little feedback. So please feel free to hold up signs, wave, clap, since I can't unmute you. So I'll sort of start at the beginning. So my name's Jay. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. I've been clean 37 years. In fact, 9/9/83 is my sobriety date. So I celebrated my 37th not too long ago. And that's for me continuous sobriety, which for me is an important part of my story. Now, when I introduce myself, I normally say I'm an addict and an alcoholic. I'm not going to tell a drunkalog or a druglog, and I certainly respect singleness of purpose. But in case there's anybody else here and drugs were part of their story, know that that's the case with me too. And again, I don't really want to spend a lot of time talking in details about that stuff, but it was part of who I am. Some of y'all might be able to relate. I always kind of keep it basic. I think about, what I was told was tell your story. What was it like? What happened and what it's like now? So I'll sort of go back to the very beginning. I was born in Jacksonville, Florida. I come from a family of six. One of the things I like to mention, which I didn't for many years, is my story, but it's important, and maybe this will kind of show up later. Is so I was born to a relatively wealthy family, and again, I say that not to separate myself from anybody on this call, but as will become evident pretty quickly, the reason I mention that is what I found about this disease. It does not matter where you start, right? It doesn't matter. I had every possible advantage that one could hope for being born into this life, blew every single one of them, right? So that to me is also an important part of my story. Had two very successful grandfathers, which was again an important part of my story as I came up, was that's what I was supposed to be. The other part of my story that's kind of interesting, and I don't know if any of my family's on here, but I am a third, right? So I am J.P. Williamson the third, named after my grandfather, and that was the first thing that I can recall that began to separate me from the rest of my family. My grandmother, who married my namesake, did not try to hide the fact that I was the favorite grandchild. And on one hand, that's kind of nice to be the favorite grandchild, unless you have brothers and sisters who will constantly remind you that you're the favorite grandchild. But again, so those things were sort of held up to me at a very early age. I think I had what was a relatively normal life when I was young. And again, y'all will be able to tell as I go on that my early idea of normal, I think, was somewhat skewed. And that it took me many years to realize that some of the things I thought were normal maybe weren't. By the way, let me put this pause here. If by the end of this story, if I do not mention in no particular order, but if I don't mention monkeys, helicopters, and leather pants, okay, if I don't mention that, please remind me, because all three of those are relatively important parts of my story, right? So lived in Jacksonville, Florida till I was 8 years old. We spent a lot of time doing the things you do when you grow up at the beach. We were at the beach, we had boats, we sailed. We did all those sorts of things. I remember at this time of year, family time. I remember Christmases and Thanksgivings were always big family times. When I was really young, I don't remember too much crazy codependency, We moved to Atlanta, Georgia in 1969 when I was 8 years old. So y'all can do the math. I'm kicking 60 in the butt. And my early years in Atlanta, I also remember as what I would consider relatively normal. My dad, I didn't know it at the time, that my dad didn't really have a job, right? When I was young, I just know that dad would go to work. And we didn't really realize until years later that he kind of worked at stuff. He was a great starter, but he wasn't the best finisher. And that's also part of my story. You know, there in the South, we have the term fixin' to, right? If y'all don't know fixin' to, right? There are a lot of people like me that were fixin' to do stuff. And I did that a lot in my life. But again, relatively normal, I think. And kind of the early, the beginning glimmers of what for me was sort of my toe into this world was when my parents enrolled me and my family, their brothers and sisters, in what I would call a hippie school, right? So there's a school in Atlanta, Georgia, it's called the Galloway School. And for any of you folks that might be a little younger on here, if y'all don't know what an open school or open campus concept is, basically it's a bunch of dope smoking hippies that started a school they enrolled us in that, okay? So that was before high school. And so that also kind of leads me to the whole, what were my parents like? Again, very good, kind, loving parents. Absolutely no beef with them, right? But they were absolutely hippies. And I think for them, that came from the fact that my grandparents, very, very strict, very, very sort of normal, right? Ozzie and Harriet from the outside, mind you, because the disease of alcoholism and addiction just ravaged my family. Both my grandparents, okay, both my grandfathers, a grandmother, father, me. I'm not going to tell everybody's story in my family, but let's just say almost everyone has a chip or is qualified for a chip in my family. So I think my parents' way to sort of respond to that was, instead of being super conservative and super formal, they went completely the opposite. So when they sort of said, okay, you know what, we're just going to enroll them into the hippie school, right? And if y'all kind of wonder what I mean by the hippie school, so normally school goes like this, okay? So Jason shows up, right, on Monday, and the teacher would say, Jason, did you do your homework? And if Jason said, no, I did not do my homework, he got the consequences, okay? In the school that I went to originally, they said, Jay, did you do your homework? My answer was always no. And then they would say, well, why didn't you do your homework, Jay? And you could then have this intellectual conversation. Well, you know, Mrs. Smith, I didn't really connect with the homework on a deep level, and I wasn't sure how it benefited me. And sociologically, I'm just not quite. You could actually do this bullshit, okay, and get away with it in school. People were allowed to smoke cigarettes in school. People were getting high on the quad. And now remember, this is, for me, before high school. All right. So the hippie school was sort of the beginning for me of what I would call my addiction. My introduction to alcohol, right? I think that's always an interesting part of a story. I don't think I'm alone in this, but I know that for me, it was my parents used to love showing us off at parties as little bitty kids, 10, 11, 12 years old, that we could mix the perfect gin and tonic. That was my dad's favorite drink, Tanqueray and tonic specifically, right? I can still taste that in my head, right? And the only way, of course, is a little child, right? You have to do what? You mix the drink, you stir it, and then, of course, you have to what? This is not, by the way, a gin and tonic, just to be clear, but you got to sample. And our parents thought that was just so cute that their kids would make cocktails for people at the party and sample them. And then, of course, little bitty people, we'd be drunk fairly quickly. So that was my introduction to drinking. Went to, again, before high school, was around drinking. I saw people drinking and doing drugs. It wasn't really a big deal to me at that time. My real introduction, not that I blame everything in my life on women, but my real introduction to alcohol and drugs was wanting to impress some older sisters. Hey, Brad, I'm just keeping it real. So I had older sisters of some friends of mine, and that's not really going to impress those people. My sister, I still remember Kristen is her name. I won't say her last name in case she's on this call, right? But Kristen was this friend of my sister's, and I so wanted to impress her. And the way to do that was by drinking and smoking Marlboro cigarettes. So I smoked a lot of cigarettes and drank a lot of stuff. And the other thing that I'll tell as part of my story, in case there are any newcomers here, I think at times when people tell their story, they only want to focus on the, let me tell you how bad it was. And I'll get to that part. But also, let me say this, and I'm real honest. drinking and drugging worked for me for a long time, right? I had a lot of fun drinking and drugging. The other thing I know is they tell us we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. So for me, there's nothing wrong with remembering a funny story that involved drinking or drugging. I've got to carry it to the end, right? And for me, I absolutely know that I can't drink or drug normally, but I had a lot of fun for a long time. The difference was, and y'all might be able to relate to this, kind of when everybody else started tapering off, I did not know what that meant. I just continued to kind of party. So again, through there, went to high school, and the another sort of important shift for me that happened. And again, I firmly believe that the reason I drank and drug is I was born an alcoholic, right? I don't believe there were some series of things that happened to make me that way, but there were things in my life that I remember as sort of pushing me in one direction faster than the other. So I went from the hippie school, and my parents thought, you know what would be a great idea is let's take Jay and put him into a Roman Catholic military academy, right? So if y'all do not know what a Roman Catholic military academy looks like, that's where long men in dresses are allowed to beat you in school, right? Nothing against any Catholics. I'm just telling you my experience at my 2 years of Roman Catholic military academy, because there was none of this open campus, let me tell you how I feel about it. When Father Frew asked you a question, you answered. I absolutely, as you might imagine, did not fit in. And that was not two fun years for me. But I did find, right, as I think we all have this special ability to do, I found some people like me that wanted to party. And so began to sort of take it into what I would call that high school level, right, of partying. And again, still having fun. Then after that 2 years, I got the first letter that said, we feel it would be to the benefit of Jay and the school if he were not to return. So then my parents, in another brilliant move, said, well, look, let's take him from this. Let's send him to a Quaker school in the middle of woods, outside of Philadelphia. So I went to a Quaker school for a year. And to take at the time what was this little cowboy boot, cowboy hat wearing sort of country guy and put him up north with all the Yankees, present company accepted, of course, right? But to put me up there with a bunch of Yankees at that time, I did not fit in. And that's when I started really learning that, okay, the little fat kid, right, can party. And that was my way of fitting in. And so I don't know if any of y'all have ever been to a boarding school that are in the woods, but it's real simple. What you do to party, right, is you sneak your way, right, and you go into the woods. And we have these elaborate forts and parties, like whole little villages in the middle of the woods built. And so that's where I learned to really sort of begin my party experience. That was the second time, by the way, I got a letter at the end of that year that suggested that it would be to the benefit of Jay and the school if he were not to return. my parents at this time were a tad frustrated with my educational track. And so they said, well, look, let's just stick him in public school, right? The one right around the corner from the house. And my experience in that was my graduating year, 1979. All I can say is, for me, it was just anything goes, right? Now, I do not know what public schools are like now, but I know the public school where I went in 1979, anything you wanted, you could find, okay? Anything you wanted, you could find. So that, for me, was the real beginning of my full-on party use. Could party all night, could go to school, could be drunk, could be hungover, could be high, didn't matter, right? Now, the other thing that I should mention that was kind of affecting some of my behavior when I said things were that I came from a normal family. So if I asked everybody in here to raise their hands if their parents were ever divorced, that'd probably be a few of y'all. If I asked everybody to raise your hands if your parents have been divorced from each other three times, raise your hand. I'm guessing it's maybe me and nobody else. So my parents were divorced three times. So they get an A for effort. I'll give them that. The first time, Lonnie's laughing a little too much at that. So the first time dad moved out and he moved about half a mile down the street. Okay. Then they got back together. Then the second time that didn't work. So dad bought mom a house across the street. And then they got back together and then it finally didn't work. And then that time mom lived in the backyard in a greenhouse. And so for me, normal, okay, perfectly normal, I'd come down for breakfast and my dad and his girlfriend right, would be having breakfast, and I'd be like, you know, oh, hey, Jane, how are you? Whatever. And then mom would come down walking through the backyard in her robe and come in to make breakfast in the kitchen, right? And then so mom and dad's girlfriend would be talking, and we'd all be chit-chatting. And I just thought this was perfectly normal, and this is what I thought Ozzie and Harriet was, right? So if y'all are beginning to get the idea that my idea of normal was maybe just a bit skewed. So managed to get through high school, did not graduate at the top of my class, managed to sneak my way into college. And I had to do the summer thing, right? Where what I got was what's called a provisional acceptance. You know, and I was so excited because I applied to a lot of schools, and all of them said no, except one who said, well, listen, we would love to have you, but you're going to have to come down and go to summer school. And if you make certain grades in summer school, you'll come in. My parents suggested that that's the school I would go to. So I went down to Stetson University. And if y'all do not know where Stetson University is, it's in DeLand, Florida, or as I like to think of it, it's 30 miles from surfing, okay? 30 miles from Daytona Beach. So went there, managed to keep my crap together for the summer, got accepted. And my parents made me, I think, what was a very sweet deal, right? My parents said, listen, if you make C's in college, we'll pay for everything, right? You will pay for your room, your board, you have a car, you'll have cash, you will have a little money to party with. We'll take care of you. I thought that was a very fair deal. Would anybody like to guess how this turned out? Needless to say, I did not meet that extremely high grade requirement. I did not have a 2.0. And at the end of the first year, yet again, I got the letter that said, you could almost say it with me now, we feel it would be to the benefit of Jay and the school if he were not to return. Now, I said I wasn't going to tell a drunkalogue or a drugalogue, but I do have to tell one funny story, if nothing else. So I decided that it would be brilliant, being this little party boy, to join a fraternity. Now, if anybody belongs to fraternities or doesn't belong to fraternities, I'm not passing judgment. I can just tell you that my fraternity was a party fraternity. All right. In fact, we were the ones they talked about in Animal House. We were a party fraternity. Well, we all got kicked out. And when I say all, what I mean is all but two people in the entire fraternity, national. So fraternities are governed by this thing called national body. National had never had to visit in over 70 years, had never visited the school or visited our fraternity. They came down because of our poor behavior and our poor grades and kicked out the entire fraternity. And this was about halfway through the year. I didn't really need to mention that to my parents. I didn't feel that was an important detail for them to know. So me and two of my fraternity brothers kind of cleaned up, and we went and rented a house in a nice little Ozzie and Harriet subdivision. And again, yeah, I know. I don't know who Liz is, but I see her shaking her head like this. Yes, Liz, that's what happened. I mean, it was this wonderful, quiet little white bread neighborhood and three just messed up college guys. We didn't have a front yard. They came to sod it, and we didn't want the sod because we were beach people. So we ran off the construction guys, and we were the only house in the neighborhood. We kept the grass, the sand in the front. So we would just have beach parties at our house. And one saving grace is, if y'all ever heard of Stouffer's frozen pizza, the vice president of Stouffer's son was one of my roommates. And so we got all the frozen pizza we could eat for free. So we ate a lot of frozen pizza. And I thought I was living the dream, right? I'm in school. They hadn't kicked me out yet. I had a tab at a bar, something I had to go make amends for after several years in the program. And then something funny happened is it was the first time I had a run-in with the law. That people kicked us out. The neighborhood kicked us out. And I had to call my parents and tell them, not only have I been kicked out of school, but I've been kicked out of where I live. Of course, at that time, I remembered that I had neglected to tell them that I had been kicked out of the fraternity. So that was sort of two conversations in one. And being the nice hippies that they were, they didn't yell and they didn't scream. But my dad said, Jay says, you remember that deal we made you? And I'm like, what deal is that, Dad? And he said, remember, make C's, we'll pay for everything. He said, you didn't make C's. So he said, come on home. He said, enjoy the summer. And then you're going to go to work. So after my freshman year of college, after failing out, came back and went to work for my dad's construction company. All right. And that for me is, again, what I'm going to call sort of the beginning of the end, because I went from what I would call relatively normal party use, right, for a partier, normal sort of party use in high school, to college, just forget about it. then working construction with my dad, okay, and then living with my dad. Because again, this was one of the times they were divorced. So mom was across the street. So dad and I had this big house together. And again, to kind of give you an idea of what normal was, my daily life. So the house that I grew up in was actually two houses connected to each other. So the old woman that had the house when her husband got sick didn't want to put him in a nursing home. So she bought the house next to her and connected him with a breezeway. So that's the house I grew up in, was these two houses. And I tell you that story to tell you this one. So dad had his house. So dad was kind of in the house with the garage, right? And the main house was over here where I was. And when I would go to get my car, I'd always have to walk out and say hi to dad and his friends. And he used to get the biggest kick out of the fact that, you know, I'd walk over, I have a girlfriend. Sorry, honey. My wife's upstairs. So I'd go walking over with my girlfriend and I'd say hi to my dad, and my dad would be blowing a joint. And he would always, he got the biggest kick out of in offering my girlfriend, you know, even in high school, yeah, you know, do you want some dope? And of course this would kind of knock them back on their heels. So right there towards the end, living with dad, he also, by the way, I mentioned to you, we came in on the family plan. By the way, you get a discount if you come in on the family plan. So again, my father is in the program. I'll kind of do it quickly. Let me see. Everybody should be, but my aunt came in the program, then me, then see my father's in the program. I've got a sister in the program, got a brother in the program. And of course I married someone in the program with more time than me. But we came in on the family plan. So towards the very end there, I was sort of, again, managing what I would call bad behavior. I don't know if that makes sense. I don't know any other way to put it. I was managing my bad using, right? And I was able to sort of cover it up because I was with my dad. And the trick was simply, don't be as hungover as dad, right? That was the trick. Did that, work construction for a couple of years. And then finally that didn't work. Dad decided to kick me out. And this for me was the very beginning of the end. So then I had absolutely no restraints. I rented this little apartment for my sister, another amends I had to make, because you're supposed to pay rent and things, I think, when you rent an apartment. I'm not sure about that. I might have that detail wrong. But moved into that apartment. And for the first time in my life, I really had zero checks and balances. And again, I wish I could say it was something like I fell in with about a bad crowd. You know, that would be so nice if I could say that's what happened to me. But part of my pattern for using was, you know, I kind of told you how I was born. I came from, you know, this sort of what I would call relatively normal preppy family. And towards the end, I kept going down, down, down. And what happened was I wound up being a mean, violent guy, right? And I never thought of myself as mean or violent, because everyone I hung out with was the same way. And one of the things that began to become clear to me was I was turning into something that I never thought about. That's like watching your hair grow. I don't know if y'all can relate to that, but I kept finding myself in these circumstances. And that was the first time I kind of started thinking, why is this happening to me? Right? Why am I like this? Because my goal was, when I realized I wasn't drinking and drugging like everybody, my trick was if I could just hang out with people that were a little bit worse than me, right? A little worse than me. And I think a buddy of mine is on the call, and I'll point, I used to joke with him. I used to hang out with him because he made me look good. But what I found was towards the end, it started getting really difficult to find people worse than me. And I do not say that to glorify my bottom, right? Everybody's got their bottom, you know, the whole elevator concept. If you got off up here, more power to you. That's not my story. I was hanging out with some very unsavory type folks. The fun of using had really gone away. Whether it was drinking or drugging, my vision was you just do as much as you can for as long as you can. And for the last several years of my my using, I didn't bother with a job or school or any of that. That'll really, by the way, jobs and school will really slow your using down. I don't recommend it if you're trying to be a professional addict. Just go ahead and go whole hog. And that's what I did. I also, for a while, thinking of my friend, made me think about this. There's a period towards the end where cleaning was really kind of a pain. It's if you have apartments and stuff, you have to clean them. And so there were these two hotels that were across the street from each other, not too far from where I partied. And so what I would do, Liz is shaking her head again, I would go live in this one hotel for about a week, and you got to put the sign up, you know, or else they'll come in and they'll try to clean every day It's crazy. They'll try and make a bed and clean every day. You don't want that. So you put the sign up for about a week until it's kind of, you can't stay. And then you check out and you go across the street. And I did that for several years, just lived at two hotels going back and forth and back and forth until they also felt maybe me being there was not the best thing. Another part of my story I got to mention, and I never know when it's going to come up, and I'm going to do my best not to be too weird about it, but it affected my relationships and my using, is I was abused. So twice, once was a friend of my sister, excuse me, when I was younger, and another was a friend of my family. And it was, it's funny. I don't know if this makes any sense. If there's anybody that's ever gone through this, it took me many years to know that what happened to me was abuse. Again, I just thought, oh, this is normal because that's what they told me it was. and so again, I don't ever want to give that credit for me being an addict or an alcoholic, but it was certainly part of my anger and my rage. And looking back now, I can see how that fueled the, you know, what I thought was this nice, mellow sort of preppy guy that I turned into, you know, a mean, violent guy. You know, and there's towards the end, sort of for me, very near the very end of it, there was a story that I tell. And again, I think about it only because I think he's on the call. I was in a situation, I don't remember how it started. There's one bar that I used to go to. I was doing something, probably a dope deal. I don't know what I was doing, but I was in the parking lot and I got in a fight with the guy. And all I remember was I hurt the guy bad. And I went in to the bar. And again, I don't tell the story a lot, but I tell it for a reason. So I went into the bar and I found my buddy. And again, I think he's on the call. And he gave me some great advice, right? Because I went to him and I told him the truth. I said, hey, he's like, are you okay? And I said, hey, listen, I just got in a fight in the parking lot. I said, I think I killed a guy. I said, what should I do? And without missing a beat and with a straight face, he goes, don't tell anybody. And again, I tell that story for two reasons. Yes, you can kind of chuckle. But what's interesting is, think about this. That was the sound advice that my friend gave me. And that was the advice that I thought made perfect sense. This from a guy who was a little preppy, to I think I killed somebody in the parking lot. What should I do? That was very, very near the end. So what happened? So I was living in the little crappy apartment that I told you guys about. And I still remember, oh God, I still remember these feelings, right? I like to convince myself, right? Back then, I don't know about y'all, but my forgetter, right? My forgetter was really good. And I also had the magic mirror. Right. So nobody here reminded me of leather pants. I'll tell you the leather pants story. So at the time, I was a little fat kid, and I went through a brief period where I wasn't a little fat bastard. And then I like to say as a cruel twist of fate, because alcohol, and it was cocaine specifically, was my drug of choice. And anybody here that's not a cokehead, one of the only benefits of coke is that normally you stay thin. I became a fat bastard doing cocaine. Okay. So thank you. Oh, that's just, this woman just held up the sign, monkey helicopters, leather pants. Thank you, Sally. Thank you, Sally. So again, cruel twist of fate, right? I couldn't even be one of those cool skinny drug addicts. No, I had to be the fat bastard drug addict. But the reason I talk about leather pants is there's a guy named Pickles, and there was a store in Atlanta called North Beach Leather. And during the brief period where I was not a fat bastard, I bought leather pants, okay, because that's what cool people do, okay? Well, you might be able to carry off leather pants, you know, if you're like Mick Jagger. But if you get to where you are circus fat, right, your hair is frazzy, you don't regularly, bathe, etc., but I would go out at night and I would try and clean up and I would squeeze into, I looked like a sausage, right? I looked like a human sausage. I would squeeze into these leather pants and the little button, did I put the little button on, right? And I put my leather shirt on and I look cool, right? I look cool. It's one of the only funny things I remember back at the very, very end. So I'm wearing my leather pants, living in this crappy little apartment. And again, my magic mirror is making me think that I'm good. Now, at this point, by the way, I had given up my car. It was just lived at my drug dealer's house because it was just much too difficult to drive back and forth anymore. And I was never sober long enough to really drive. And so my world had gotten really small to where I could pretty much walk to every bar that I needed to go to, or I could get my friends to come get me. The joke is, you know, in the Coke world is if you got the big bag, people will drive you places, right? So I didn't have a car. I'd gotten rid of furniture because, again, that's just more stuff you have to clean. And I had moved my bedroom. Now, when I say my bedroom, I mean I had a mattress. I don't mean a bed with a mattress on it. I had a mattress. And specifically, not even the whole thing, just the top part, not even the box spring. I had drug all that and I put that into the living room, right? And that's where the TV was. And I was down to one pot. I think I had one pot. It was a really nice pot. I had one pot for cooking, right? And that was sort of where I was. Now, remember, I'm still looking good, by the way. Circus fat, leather pants, no furniture, one pot. So at least, you know, the expression, I did have a pot to piss in. And I got a knock on my door one night. And again, being the kind of guy I am, right? You get a knock on the door, you grab a couple guns, you go to the door, you try and make yourself look normal. And it was my oldest sister, right? And of the kids, she and I are the ones that are sort of the most alike. And so she knocked on the door and she opened the door and I'm trying to look normal. I don't know if y'all have ever gotten caught drunk or, you know, you're trying to look normal. Oh, sure. I'm not asleep. Come on in. And she says, no, I'm not coming in. She goes, I'm just here to let you know. As far as I'm concerned, I only have one brother, right? Meaning not me anymore, just the other brother. And then she shut the door in my face and walked away. That was the first step of my downfall. And then shortly after that, and I don't remember how long, because again, I wasn't thinking very clearly. I found a letter, right, that I had written to myself probably when I was, I don't know, 18, 19 years old. And it was a list of all the cool things I wanted to do in life, right? Because remember, I mentioned I had two very successful grandfathers. So I always knew I was going to be a businessman. I didn't really know what that meant when I was a kid, but I was going to be a businessman. And so I'd written down all these cool things I wanted to do, graduate high school, graduate college, graduate, do this, get married, et cetera. And I had accomplished zero items on that list. So my sister divorced me, if that makes sense. And then I found this list of things I wanted to accomplish, and I never did, not one of them. And I realized, hey, you know what, I might have a problem. And I called my parents and I said, hey, I think I might have a problem. And what was funny to me, I don't know how many of y'all sort of came out to your parents that way, as it were, or came out to the other people. I was convinced that they were going to be, what? Oh, my God, we never knew, Jay. No, that both of them first words were, thank God. All right. Thank God. So I called them and they said, well, what do you want to do? I said, I don't know. And this, the treatment was really kind of catching fire back then, right? It wasn't as common as it was now, but it was really kind of catching fire. A couple of well-known places. One was in Atlanta, and my my aunt, who I didn't really know at the time, had gone into treatment a little before me. We had some friends who were like, well, great, do you want to go into treatment? And I said, sure, that sounds great. Let's do that. And they were, at first, they were like, great, well, we'll go tomorrow. And I went, no, ahead, there we go. I'm an important man. I've got stuff to take care of. And so we had a Jay's going to treatment party, which I thought was kind of a nice event, right? You know, 300 or 400 of your closest friends, and we blew it out. And it was a big joke. Everybody's, what are you doing? Man, I'm going to treatment. I'm going to treatment. And I really thought, do y'all remember, what was the movie with John Candy, the Army movie? Stripes, right? And they're interviewing John Candy, you know, and he's the big fat bastard like I was. And they're going around telling their story. And he goes, you know, I thought I'd come in and I'd be a lean, mean fighting machine. And I really thought, oh, treatment's going to teach me how to drink and drug, because everyone in my family drank and drug successfully, right? Went to treatment, and I don't know about you guys, the minute I walked to the door, swear to God, the minute I walked through the door, I believed that I was home. I knew that something was going to change, because for me, where I was at the end, I just wanted to stop. I wanted to stop feeling. I wanted to stop thinking. wanted to stop living, but was too much of a chicken shit to do that. I just know that I didn't want to feel what I was feeling anymore. So I went to treatment, wrote the first part of that check. And I remember not wanting to write that check because I swear to God, I'm writing it, calculating how many grams of Coke is that, right? So I'm writing the first check and they put me in treatment. And what I tell people about the meeting is I don't remember much about my first meeting. It was really a blur, okay? But I remember two things. One was a guy who was talking about the yets, right? And because remember, I'm still thinking at the time, right? I'm not an act alcoholic. I didn't know what that was. I just have a little problem maybe, but I'm a normal, I'm this cool looking preppy guy, right? I thought. Well, this guy was telling the story and he was a heavy duty IV drug user, right? And he started talking about how he was raised. And he says, well, you know, I started out and I wasn't going to be a drunk like my dad. And I started drinking. And he goes, then I started drinking. And he said, well, you know, I'm not going to smoke dope like my son. And I started smoking dope. And he said, well, you know, but I'll never do hard drugs. And he started doing hard drugs. And then he said, I'll never shoot dope. I'll never shoot dope. And then he started shooting dope. And then he said, you know, and then I told myself I'll never break sterile procedure, right? Meaning I'll never use a needle more than once. And then he started saying, well, I'll never use a needle more than three times. And when this guy was telling me that story, I couldn't relate to specifically the whole using needle thing, but what resonated with me was how this guy was absolutely convinced he would never get to the next stage and how this guy continued to go to the next stage. And for me, right, hey, I'm this little preppy rich kid, and how do I wind up hanging out with people, right, that are violent, gun-toting rat bastards? And I put myself in that category. And then the second thing I remember, I remember three things. The other thing I remember is people like talking about how much time they had and picking up chips. And I'm thinking, bullshit, excuse my language. Like, no way that guy's got a year or two or three. And then I remembered, right, one of my favorite parts is where they said the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. And I made the decision that night. I said, you know what? It's not going to work. I know it's not going to work, but for the first time in my life, I'm going to let somebody else tell me what to do, and I'm going to give it a shot. And what I tell people is, and some of the folks on this call may have heard me say this, I made that promise to myself 37 years ago. As soon as this program stops working, I'll go back out. All right. And I have not yet found a circumstance that has required me to go back out. And that to me is super powerful, because what I was scared about was, oh my God, well, what happens if, you know, I lose a job, right? Am I going to go out? What happens if I get divorced? What happens if what's the bad thing that could happen to me that will make me use? And the thing that I would say, if there's any newcomer on this call, is the beauty of this program is the only people use are the ones that want to or choose to. There's nothing that can happen that will make you use. And that for me was super powerful. All right. I'm kind of scribbling down, so I'm looking at my little notes. And it's funny, I noticed that when I'm writing my little notes, I wrote normal. And every time I wrote normal, I put little air quotes around it. I was promised the opportunity to be an acceptable, responsible, productive member of society. I had no idea what that meant, right? To be an acceptable, responsible, productive member of society. But what it's like now, right? Went to treatment. They made the suggestion, by the way, is, you know, we think you should go to a halfway house. And I'm like, this is coming out of treatment. And I remember saying, halfway house, those are for drug addicts. And the guy goes, yes. I'm like, oh, you mean me? Oh, okay. So I went to a halfway house. At the end of the halfway house, I thought they were making this crap up. They said, well, we think you could benefit from a three-quarter house. And I'm like, there's no such thing. Apparently there is such a thing as a three-quarter house. And they suggested I went to it. And I can tell you right now, if there was a 7/8 house, I would probably live in it now. Right. For me, again, however you came in this program, if it's working for you, more power to you. I can tell you, for me, I have an immense amount of respect, for people that come into this program and didn't go through treatment, that just like come into a meeting. That's amazing to me that any of you folks can do that. I loved the structure. Some of the best times in my life were early recovery, where we're all kind of going through the same crap at the same time, right? And you have to go to a certain number of meetings and you've got people there to help guide you, et cetera. Because I remember one of my first leaves, right? What they call TL, therapeutic leave. So after you've been there a number of weeks, you can register to go home for the weekend and you can actually see people. But you have to write out, it's really kind of interesting. You have to write out like almost minute by minute what you're going to do. My dad will pick me up Friday at 3 o'clock. I will then go home. So I did all that. Well, one of the things is I was allowed to have a date, kind of a supervised date, but I was allowed to have a date. And the guy that was going to take me on a date, right? It was hilarious. So we're at the restaurant, and the girl that I'm with, the guy thought for some reason that we were like newlywed couples. So he thought we were cute. So he comes over and he brings us a drink, a shot. I'm like, oh, this is great. This is my, I'm with the woman and it's the thing. And he brings a shot. And I'm like, no. So the woman, she just drinks both of the shots to help me out, which I thought was very generous. Well, there was a Japanese restaurant. And I guess they were sort of offended that we, so then they brought us another shot that was something different. Right. And I'm like, no. Now she drinks that. So this went on like 3 or 4 times. I realized, wow, I didn't understand just how interesting going out into the real world is going to be and how I had integrated alcohol and drugs into every aspect of my life. Right. So where am I now? Again, 37 years clean. Been married 26 years in a row to the same one, by the way. Guys my age have to say all three of those things. Okay. She's on the call. She just gave me a thumbs up. Thank you. Okay. So she has tolerated me for 26 years. My best friend, who I think is on this call, my best friend and I who used to use together are both now in the program together. We have worked together. I've had grown-up jobs, right? I actually pay taxes. I do that really kooky stuff y'all may have heard of. I like shower on a regular basis and brush my teeth. Right? All those little grown-up things that you're laughing, but I did not do all that stuff on a regular basis, right? So what was it like? Well, you know, again, for many years it worked. And then it got really bad. And for me, it got miserable and violent. And I was not a happy person. I thought I was for years. I saw a picture. The people I hung out with, we didn't let people take pictures of us. But there's one picture my kid brother loves to break out every once in a while. And it's the last using picture that was ever taken of me. And the best way I can describe it, and I'd hope to be able to get a copy and I was going to show y'all, but he loves breaking it out at family gatherings. The best way I can describe it is if you see a picture of John Candy right before he died, right at the height of his addiction, big, massive guy, curly hair, just, I mean, that's me. And I look at that picture today and I'm like, oh my God, who is that guy? Right. The highest compliment that I'll ever get paid is if I'm talking with somebody in the world today and they don't know about me, and if it becomes appropriate, I will tell them. Right. And what's amazing to me is when they will say, no, really? Because anyone, me back in the day, there was no question I was a problem child. When I got clean and I went home and to live with dad, right? I was going to go out and I said, Dad, I need a key. And he goes, to what? And I went, I need a key to the house to get back in. He goes, no. And I went, but Dad, I've been through treatment, right? He goes, why can't I have a key? And he goes, because I've met you, right? And that's when I realized, okay, I'm going to have to work at this stuff, right? And for me, that's really what the 10th step is all about, right? I think all the steps are super important, right? But every day I've got to look back, right? And I've got to say, what did I do well? What did I do not so good? What can I do differently? And then again, one of my favorite lines is practice these principles in all our affairs, right? I used to love getting mad at people, right? It was really fun for me. I'm at the point now, and this has happened a couple of times since I've been sober. I don't know if y'all can relate. Getting sober will mess up your being an ass, right? I was at a fast food restaurant, and whatever reason, the girl behind the counter was just not making my milkshake quite fast enough. I went off on her. Now, when I was drinking and drugging, the fact that I just went off on her and didn't tear something up would have been amazing. But, you know, I was righteous indignation. I get in my car and I go down the road and I make it about 2 or 3 miles. And I'm like, son of a, and I had to go back and I had to apologize. I don't know about y'all, but I never apologized for anything. Right? That for me is practice these principles in all our affairs. One of the greatest gifts that I have, other than my lovely bride, right, is a family that supported me through all of this. Even when they were active in their addiction, still managed to try and support me. I will say it made for some very interesting family counseling sessions, but they were there for me. I lost both my mother and father recently. And again, the last time they were divorced, it stuck. They both remarried to wonderful people that made them relatively happy, and they still stayed friends. I lost my mom and then lost my father. I think it was 8 months after. And what was interesting, my wife just is telling me 4 months after, 5 months, whatever, four. Okay. She's giving me hand signals. What was interesting was I was able to be there for them. Right. And I've seen this from my wife, who again has a little more time than I do. She's 38 and she was able to be there for her parents when they died. Now, I don't know about you guys, but when I was drinking and drugging, right, and at the height of my addiction, I wasn't there for anybody but me. When my grandfather died, my cousin and I, we thought it was perfectly appropriate way to celebrate his life. It's in Greenville, South Carolina. We went to a bar, we got in fights, and we tore up the bar. Right? And that's what we did. I was able to be here for my mom and dad. And I consider that one of the best type of amends possible, was that living amends, right? To be able to be there. The fact that the same guy that wasn't willing to give me a key to his house, right, is the one that asked me, right, should he live or die, right? Called me to have this conversation with him. If you want to talk about a sobering conversation, talk about helping walk your dad through dying. And didn't get too mad at my family. I had one family member that accused me of, you know, you're trying to kill our father. You're taking him, and the fact that he's dead is your fault. And was able not to explode at that guy, was able to call family and friends and go to a meeting and talk to him about it. So what was it like? It was good until it wasn't. And then it was really bad. What happened? I finally asked for help and went to treatment. And what's it like now? What's that expression? I wouldn't trade my best day drunk for my worst day sober for my best day drunk or whatever. I don't know about that, right? I had some pretty good days drinking. I've had some really crappy days using, but I have no desire to go back, because here's what I know. Here's what I absolutely know. And please make sure you hear this whole thing, especially if you're a newcomer, okay? I absolutely believe that I could use successfully. Here's the problem. I don't know if that would be for a day, a week, or a month, because here's what I know will happen after that. Without any doubt, I know that I will go right back to using the way I used to, right? We talk about rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed this path, right? I'm not going to question the book, but I will tell you this. In 37 years, I have never seen anyone fail who has thoroughly followed this path. I'm not saying there aren't those people. I'm just saying in my experience, I've seen people go back out. Some of them come in, some of them don't. Without fail, the ones that I've seen that have gone out have stopped trying to work this to the best of their ability. I'm not saying it's easy, but this has given me a life beyond anything that I could understand or comprehend. I've become a guy I never knew I wanted to be. I've become the boring old straight dude, right? And absolutely love it, right? Absolutely love it. Again, that's kind of my story. I don't know if any of that stuff resonates with anybody, but that's kind of where I'm at. And then let's see, I told you about leather pants. Oh, monkeys and helicopters. Sally, you let me down. So when I was talking about normal, so growing up, my youngest oldest sister decided that she wanted a different kind of pet. Don't even try, Sally. It's too late. I got you. She decided she wanted a different pet. So whereas we had dogs and cats, et cetera, my sister Lane decided to collect monkeys. Right. So we had a monkey habitat in the backyard. And it was always kind of interesting. You know, just like Michael Jackson, you know, people that kind of go, I can't believe somebody would have monkeys. They talk about Michael Jackson. I'm like, no, we used to have monkeys growing up. And used to think that was just absolutely perfectly normal to have monkeys. Very strange. And then let's see the helicopters again. So the whole thing about helicopters. So my dad, being sort of the grandiose alcoholic that he was, my dad was a pilot. He was very good. He competed and he had a lot of fun, but he sold helicopters and airplanes. And I remember thinking perfectly normal, the way we used to get taken to summer camp, my kid brother, you'd fly the helicopter to the summer camp. You know, everybody else, you did the little thing, you know, where you drive your car and you unpack everything. And dad would always make a big production of showing up. And of course, most summer camps don't have helipads. Right. So they'd have to clear a field and you get the land and then you're the center of attention. It's really cool and exciting. And again, to me, perfectly normal. I did not understand people that didn't have monkeys and helicopters and leather pants. Y'all weren't normal if you didn't have those things. I have now learned at almost 60 years old that, you know what? Not everybody in the world has monkeys, helicopters and leather pants. And you know what? I'm okay with none of those things. I'm a little bit ahead of schedule. I hope I didn't ramble. I'm sure I missed stuff. You know, they always talk about there's a story you want to tell, the story you're going to tell, and the story you should have told. So hopefully I got the three of those stories relatively close together. Delighted to turn it back to you guys. Anybody got any questions, or Brad, whatever you want to do with the 8 minutes you got left.
Thanks so much, Jay. I really appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Hey, buddy.
Good time. Thus concludes tonight's festivities. It's been really an honor and a privilege to be here with everyone. Jay, again, thank you so much for your time and your service this evening. Jason, thank you for the suggestion. Liz, as always, it's a pleasure to work beside you and do Alcoholics Anonymous with each and every one of you. John, thank you so much for keeping our intergroup office going. And thanks to each and every one of you for continuing to share this message to the man who still suffers. It doesn't take much to get me spiritually charged these days, but being in a Zoom room full of people that I know are part of my fellowship right here, and I can call in any time, just means a great amount to me in this difficult time. I know, and I'll shut up after this, but a friend of ours in Iowa often said through this that the entire world currently is experiencing the first step. The difference is that we have 11 more. You know, we're very, very fortunate in this time. So God be with you all. And we will close this evening with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who've trespassed against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever and ever. Amen. Thank you guys for a great evening. I mean, really, just spectacular. And I'm going to mute everybody. If you'd like to thank Jay, feel free. Thanks again, Jay.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.